Well, 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 what an upset. The Queensland Reds 25-19 to round out Super Rugby Round 3, and they're well and truly entrenched in the top four. What a performance from the Reds. That finished the weekend on a high, and we're going to be catching up with Matt Fesler, one of the real stars of the Queensland Reds, in a moment, who made his test debut last year under Eddie Jones. Wasn't just that, though. We know that the Brumbies got over the top of the Force, a win as well. First up, the Melbourne Rebels, an important one before they host the Reds themselves. Tars, bloody close, very close indeed. A kick from Tane Edmund misses, and the Highlands scrape home. And Jesus, who would have thought the Crusaders would have been 0-3 for the first time since 1996 after losing to the Fiji Drua. Talking to me tonight, Matty Tamua in Japan. Matt, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. Still recovering from the weekend. As you said, it was a ripper, and what a game to finish with the Reds v Chiefs. It was an odd week for the Tipsters, as you say. Crusaders 0-3. I don't think many people have seen that coming at the start of the year.
No, you're not wrong. And you can think about Six Nations, what happened over the weekend, to a huge win to France, and then upsets really with England knocking over the world's best team in inverted commas, Ireland at home at Twickenham, and then, of course, Italy. Lewis Leiner scoring in Italy's upset win, their first home win in 11 years against Scotland. Shout out to Lewis Leiner.
And he said one win, one try, one cap. He might retire, and as someone who's played a bit more, I might tell him it doesn't get much better than that. So retiring is probably not the worst idea. So it's awesome, and obviously his brother doing great things up north as well.
Yeah, indeed. So we're going to talk about that Super Rugby, as well as Rugby Australia's recommendations, the 23 recommendations from the review that's finally been revealed. All that up next with the Raw Rugby Podcast. Well, Matty Tamua, I don't think there would have been too many people out there that would have thought that the Reds would upset the Chiefs. They did. Herculean effort, titanic effort, as Les Kiss described it at full time. What were your impressions from an unbelievable Super Rugby match, I thought?
Yeah, it really was. And there are many things at play. I commented, of all things, on the referee. I thought he played his part as well, just let the game flow. But the Reds were so impressive, weren't they? After a really tough week where they were, you know, very unlucky to lose in bonus point time or whatever it's called, very easy for there to be a hangover. And I don't know about you, but it was really nice to see an Australian team kind of back it up against two quality oppositions and get a result.
Yeah, because actually only a night earlier, the Waratahs missed the chance to go back-to-back against New Zealand sides for the first time since 2015. And you think about, on the other side of the coin, Queensland, it was golden point, 38-33 they end up losing. But, yeah, I agree. Benny O'Keefe, I thought he had a good game. Communication was strong. I think Tom Lynott and Queensland's probably thinking there should have been a yellow card in the mix there. Tell me, the hit from Finau, I think it was, it was late. Was it late and merited a yellow card, or was it just a pretty good shot?
Mate, I reckon I probably won't be the most popular opinion. I thought it was obviously late. In saying that, like, that you keep replaying it in slow-mo, and I think if you press pause, it's probably very late. So, like, I feel like with anything, if you're talking about timing, it needs to be in full pace. I thought the hit was totally legal. It was under the armpits. His arm was there. The fact that Tom Lynott bounced off his shoulder isn't a case of a shoulder charge. So I thought the hit was totally legal, and, you know, the timing of it is probably where the question for me, where it is. The thing I love is that he gets up and he keeps playing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he got subbed a little bit later, which, you know, they had a fly-off reserve on the bench anyway. So I think that was always going to happen. But it really, it's a nice sign when you see a 10 get up like that. And I think it's just a bit of part of the game, to be honest.
There's an element of me that agrees. I think the consistency is the sort of thing that you want, because I think if that's a Six Nations game or international game, that 10 stays down there for a long while, and then all of a sudden it's looked at and it probably turns into a penalty.
He gets put in jail, I think, in the Northern Hemisphere. But, yeah. But once again, I like the fact that Ben O'Keefe he understood that there is – something at play here, that, you know, we are trying to have a bit of a spectacle, and we're not going to over, you know, we still care player safety and all that, but yeah, I personally thought a penalty was what was warranted, and yeah, I was happy with the outcome.
Interestingly, I might have been sent some footage not too long ago, but it's not the first time he's done a late shot. Only a week earlier, he creamed Noah Lolesio late as well. It probably was a little bit more on time, I suppose, than the liner one. But yeah, keep an eye on that for the Chiefs fans. I think he's probably pretty lucky here, and a different referee would have seen that. Perhaps an alternate view. What I want to talk about, though, the Reds were really impressive. I thought the midfield combination worked really well. Tate McDermott's pass wasn't always on point, but Isaac Henry, seamless in there for Hunter Paisami. Josh Fluke, a guy that just always, I think, makes the right decision. He's just such a cool, calm head. But they won off the back of their work in the forward pack, and the front row was outstanding. Zane Nongor, I think, was one of his better games. Ryan Smith was really busy, 21 tackles, industrious. And then the back row, it could be the best combo trio in Super Rugby from an Australian perspective anyway. Liam Wright, Fraser McWright, Harry Wilson. What are your thoughts on them?
Oh, they're outstanding, aren't they? And they're good to watch. I love watching Wilson, McWright. I don't know how they find each other so confident. You know, the amount of times that Fraser might score a try in the past is from Harry. It's bizarre. But, yeah, you're right. And one thing I really loved about the Queensland team, particularly in the back line, they're all kind of triple threat players. They can all run, pass and kick. You don't have kind of these guys who are just isolated runner, isolated kicker, isolated passer. They could all kind of move in and around. And, you know, your Jock Campbell, he might end up on the left wing. Fluke might end up at 10. And they do it really well, and it allows them to play this game, this really kind of game with width, game with, you know, a lot of ball movement. And, yeah, it's exciting to watch. And I really enjoy kind of how they've picked that team. I think it's different to many other teams where I think we spoke a couple of weeks ago about, you know, the South Africans will always have your direct centres, will have your quick wingers, will have a left-footed kicker at fullback or something like that. This Queensland team, it's quite hard to analyse them because their players are a triple threat. All their backs can run, pass and kick and very well.
All right, so the person that's going to be joining us is a Queensland Red Star. He's on the other side of this. Well, it's a very warm welcome to the Reds' prolific try scorer. I know he's not a winger or a back. He's the Reds' hooker, Matt Fesler. Matt, bloody good to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Tell me, a man yourself, the hookers, you can't stop scoring tries at the moment. Tell us a little bit about that. And also, Matt, I want to hear your thoughts. What's it like when you continually see a hooker score at the end of a rolling wall?
Mate, it's honestly a bit of a cop-out. Like, actually, cop a fair bit of stick at training for it. So I'm pretty conscious that I need to actually shout out the guys that do the hard work up front. I think our new forwards coach in Zane Hilton's very technical in that area, and we've got a lot of hard guys up front that do those tough jobs, and obviously nailing the line-out drill and getting us going forward, and then I'm sort of the person that benefits at the back of that. But yeah, a few guys like Wilson and stuff sort of tend to give me a bit of stick about it.
Matty, is many a guy, namely probably a Falau Faingata, who's made a career out of sitting on the back of a mall and placing the ball over, and he's ended up in Clermont on big dough, no doubt. So if I was you, I'd be lapping it up, mate. Don't worry about that. Wilson's just jealous.
Yeah, I think that's me eventually. But you guys like Ryan Smith, Liam Wright, who's our caller, those two sort of run our attacking line out. And then obviously the big boys up front, yeah, Nogsy, Seffs, Kenny Ravis, all those sort of guys that give us that go forward and are really technically good in that space. But it's kind of it's weird. During preseason, I didn't sort of envisage us to be mauling as well and as frequently as we have been. But yeah, it's definitely just added that extra dimension to our game and something that we know we can sort of go to.
You don't want to go away from a good thing, do you? So,
yeah, exactly. Just keep going to the well.
Tell us, Matt, a huge win on the weekend. The crowd, best part of 17,000 there. Can you bring us into what was the feeling like on the field, in the change rooms after, when you when you've done a job, a big shift, and you've beaten the Chiefs and you held them out for 3 minutes on your try line?
Well, I was actually off the field at that point, so it was kind of on the sideline, mate. I was on the edge of my seat. They were just hammering our own line, and the boys obviously ended up kicking them out, which was awesome. So it was an awesome feeling for us, but at the same time, I don't think you can get too far ahead, you know. Like, it is round, you got to keep things in perspective. It is round three. We do have some really tough opponents coming up. We got the Rebels this weekend. We've got a big pack, and we'll look to obviously physically impose themselves on the game. But, yeah, mate, it was awesome. The crowd was super vocal. And, yeah, it's good to see Queensland fans sort of getting back out there. On a personal note, I'm sort of quite happy that we're winning those sort of gutsy games at home. We obviously had the Tars in round one and then had the Chiefs then. And I hope that those sort of wins at home can sort of start encouraging that crowd growth that we sort of have had in sort of previous years when we've been successful.
Yeah, as you said, Matty, you were on the bench at the end of the game, obviously, but the role of your bench, you know, we saw particularly in the scrum, there's some big dominance with Ravi and Tumanga Allen coming on and getting some really crucial penalties. I'm just interested to know how that, in the past, you could say Australian teams have probably fallen off in the last 20 because our bench hasn't been strong enough, but it clearly seems something that the Reds have invested in and something that you're quite confident in your bench coming.
Yeah, we had quite a good recruitment drive over that off-season period with Les and Cordingley, and they obviously signed you guys like Jeff Tumanga Allen, who came on, brought some awesome impact at scrum time and a heap of energy. And yeah, it's awesome having those experienced guys coming off the bench, you know. I think previously we've sort of had a quite young front row, so it's good just having a guy who's got 120 Super Rugby caps coming off the bench and icing the game for us. It's quite comforting, eh?
And a big social following as well. I see he's quite active on the social media.
Yeah, he loves it. Big influencer guy.
Doesn't he? What?
Yeah, a few little vlogs and stuff. He loves it, mate.
Mate, what's that like though? Because he and Alex Hodgman, I've spoken to Alex a couple of times now. He's got a lot of energy and personality too. What's it been like having those two guys, former All Blacks, come into a Queensland setup?
I think that there's a couple of things. They're obviously both bring a wealth of experience that they sort of are really happy to share, but they're also really approachable, personable sort of guys that are happy to chat. They're happy for a laugh, but at the same time, they're very professional. They're in early. They watched lots of footage. They're there after doing recovery. They're in the sauna, ice baths, all that kind of stuff. So they're both very just well-rounded, and probably something that we've kind of, I think, craved in our squad in comparison to previous years where it's a lot of youngsters, you know.
Matty, as a Queensland born and bred, I'm interested to hear how it is kind of growing up with guys like Tate, Harry Wilson, Jordan Petaia, and actually being able to experience, you know, the juniors, whether it be schoolboys, 20s, but now the Reds and kind of seeing you guys thrive at a super level. What's it like having that consistency and having Queenslanders alongside you, or is it very much just, you know, you just play with whoever, or do you enjoy having that kind of, those combinations kind of build over time?
Yeah, I think like on the Queensland side of it, for me personally and probably for the other homegrown guys, there is a fair bit of meaning behind putting on the jersey every week when you grow up supporting a team. And then you're sort of dreaming about playing about them when you're a young fella, and then you finally do. Each time you get to run out at Suncorp, it is quite special, mate. But yeah, I think just playing with and against each other from a young age, you kind of learn each other's habits, what you're good at, what each other are deficient at, and like I think it sort of just adds to a well-rounded performance. Like you obviously see Wilson and Fraser bouncing off each other quite a lot. They know what each other want from one another in attack and defense and that kind of stuff. And then probably goes the same with your Tates and Geordies and whatever, offload tendencies and everything. And I think that sort of just gels together and provides a performance that you kind of can't get by just throwing a team of good players together that don't really know each other that well.
It's a big thing on continuity there as well. Like we know that Ben Darwin is prolific around a cohesion kind of theory, but
yeah.
Speaking of Queensland and the passion there, we saw some pretty cool footage of Les Kiss over the last week or so, and it was played relentlessly by Stan, but pretty cool to allow access in to show what it means for a former Queenslander to be coaching Queensland. You see that with Les, don't you?
Yeah. Are you referring to that little like sort of snippet where it'll catch him talking during the game and in the box and warm up and that kind of stuff? Yeah. Interesting to see how he was portrayed in that. Like, because obviously he's amping us up in most of those points, and in the box he's obviously like heated in the moment, he's a competitive guy, but he's also like quite well-rounded and calm in during the week, and he's good at like giving players confidence and stuff, but he's also great at those pre-game G-ups, and obviously wearing a maroon jersey in the past himself, he sort of can relate to and articulate how special that is, which is pretty cool.
You mean there's no cattle dog calls of the old days and none of that going on anymore?
Yeah, I won't be shaving QLB in the side of my head and yelling at Queensland and running out of the tunnel anytime soon, mate.
One thing I did notice actually was against the Chiefs, they in the opening rounds, they were very good at their quick lineouts and doing a kind of a move where the winger would actually run up 20 metres and then he would lob the ball over to the hooker and then they'd throw it in nice and quickly. And I think you could see on the telecast, I can't remember who it was, if it was Fluke or whatever.
Really? Yeah.
He's jumped in but to me that, like, I noticed that not too many people might have noticed that in the weeks before, but that just was an indication of a well-prepared Reds team. Like that's something that clearly the Chiefs did to the Brumbies in the week before, and the Brumbies couldn't respond, but you guys had clearly spoken about that. It's interesting to hear you say how, like, the Les might come across as, you know, the emotional part and whatnot, but clearly there's some substance behind that, and you guys are a well-prepared rugby team.
Yeah, definitely. And that also was sort of evident in some of the kick strategy we had against it. And, mate, credit to D-Mac. He read the plays often quite well. I know there was that contestable kick in the corner that could have gone either way. It was either resulting in Greely scoring a try or D-Mac catching a mark. But, our coaches do their homework during the week, and we do train for that sort of stuff. So we did have sort of a plan in place for the Chiefs wanting to play those quick line-out moves, and it did involve sort of the winger and the halfback kind of getting in the road of that happening. So, yeah, we were aware of it, and, mate, it's just, I think, preparing. Obviously, anything can happen during the game, you know, but you give yourself the best chance of performing well if you do prepare like that.
That's great analysis, Matty Timur. Thanks for bringing that to us on the Raw Rugby Pod. Matt, speaking of...
Yeah, anyone coaching, would have thought you would have played, mate.
speaking of coaching, it's been a bit of a shake-up at the Reds, a brand-new coaching team. Do you think that the Reds needed it, and specifically someone like a Zane Hilton, who's had a real body of work, comes to the Reds after 10 years, seems like that Reds pack with the Moore and the scrum, it is humming underneath his kind of mentorship.
Yeah, I think it is, mate. Change can be like a holiday too. And I think the previous coaching staff were awesome, mate, and they brought a lot of strong things to our game, particularly on that mindset side of it. And then I think Zane, just with his wealth of experience sort of coaching in Japan and overseas and Italy and that kind of stuff, he's just really across, like, minute details that can sometimes often be the difference between scoring a mall try and messing one up, or getting a scrum penalty in the ref's perception and winning the rest of the session versus not. And, mate, he's really across that. And so is Fish, the our skills coach as well. He's really detailed around support lines, breakdown stuff, all that kind of stuff, mate. I can't speak highly enough of our coaching staff at the moment. And hopefully we keep producing performances like we did on the weekend.
Observing from afar, I think one of the most impressive things was to see how strong the set piece was. And, you know, in Australia, we, you know, competing with league, we like the crossfield kicks, we like the, you know, offloads and whatnot, but the set piece is ultimately where the game's won. And it's probably, as you say, change as good as a break, but, you know, I'm sure Brad Thorne implemented a lot of things that are probably still being used there, but you guys have clearly moved on, which is really good to see.
Yeah, definitely. There's been heaps of growth sort of over the preseason, mate. It's awesome. I'm really enjoying it.
What about this weekend? It's the Melbourne Rebels. You touched upon it. That's going to be a tough one. And you know, with the amount of former Reds sort of players that are in that Rebels team, it's going to be spicy. I imagine there's going to be a fair bit of passion and emotion in it. has it been spoken about? How do you prepare and then like really quickly shift from a great win over a New Zealand side to preparing for someone like the Rebels?
Yeah, I think you're probably allowed 24 hours to sort of either feel really good about yourself, or if it's after a loss, feel really bad about yourself. And then when you come in on Monday and you're doing your review, preview, mate, it's a completely clean slate from my perspective. Obviously, a lot of super talented guys at the Rebels, and I think you're definitely in for a physical and well-contested game this weekend. But yeah, I think the Rebels are coming off a couple of good wins, and we owe them all, every respect to sort of prepare well and try and play as well as we can. You touched on the fact that a few of the guys are from Queensland. I don't think that really matters. Like, they're all good footy players in their own right. There's a couple of homegrown ones, a few from Sydney, a few from Queensland. But for us, yeah, it's just about trying to put in another good performance, you know.
And Matty, obviously a few former teammates, both at the Wallabies as well. You know, you got your debut last year. Interested to hear how that was personally, as you know, obviously your grandfather. I think I read he might have won the Bledisloe in 1934, probably the last time we won it as a country. interested, yeah, just mate. Interested to hear, you know, about that kind of roller coaster in terms of playing for your country and what that meant.
Both my parents were sort of heavily involved in rugby growing up, and I actually think Mum and Dad's first proper date might have been at a Springbok Wallabies game at Suncorp, maybe. So, like, yeah, that whole rugby stuff is going back a fair way. Obviously, it's my grandfather playing for the Wallabies as well, and that blood is low. But yeah, it was kind of a funny one. I think I first got the call from Webby on a Sunday. I was having a coffee with Mum just at a coffee shop around the corner from mine in Brizzy, and it was a number I didn't know, and I'm like, what's going on here? Answered it, and then he's like, hey mate, it's Chris Webb, manager of the Wallabies, blah blah blah. And from then on, like, all the info just in one ear out the other. Anyway, I hung up, and then I just thought, I wonder if any of the boys have taken the piss out of me here. Like, that's like a Ryan Smith, Harry Wilson special. So
if he asked for your credit card details, then you might have been in trouble.
Yeah. But basically, I just called Will, so he fact-checked it, and, yeah, it was all good. But, yeah, mate, loved every minute of it last year. Obviously, the results weren't what we wanted or anticipated, but I still learned heaps. And, there's nothing quite like putting on a gold jersey for Australia for the first time. Yeah, something I'll never forget.
I was pretty privileged. I was one of the journos that got to follow you guys around last year. And what I'll say about Matt Fesler is, I don't think I saw a hooker throw more balls. And at every training session, you often started the training session by throwing balls onto the steps there and in St. Etienne. What were some of the things, like the Wallabies doco came out recently. I don't know if you've watched it, have you?
Nah. To be honest, I don't. Nah, not so much PTSD, but I don't know, mate. I'm sort of pretty happy to move on, you know. Learn my lessons, take your licks, and on to the next.
So I imagine you're definitely looking forward to this year and the way you started. I don't think I'd be jumping to any big sweeping calls here by saying that you'll be firmly in the mix again. But what are some of the lessons that you can take out of last year and some of those things that you can build in and take going forward under a Joe Schmidt kind of environment?
Well, I think probably There was sort of a little bit of at the time that I sort of first went into the squad, I remember one thing that'll stick with me is I was having a chat with Eddie, just a general chit chat at a table with him at lunch or something. I think it was in Century Cove, and it was sort of when there was a bit of uncertainty around what the Reds coaches would actually, who they would be and what was going on. It was sort of when Thorny announced that he wasn't re-signing, that kind of stuff. And one thing he said to me is he was just like, mate, good players take control of their careers. It doesn't matter whether your coach is a good coach or a bad coach or whatever. Good players will just sort of do their stuff and try and make it happen off their own back. Like, they don't sort of rely on anyone else to sort of get somewhere. And I think, yeah, that really stuck with me and sort of instilled, and probably with some of the other boys as well, and it instilled sort of a bit of a work ethic in there that you don't realize how much you can do, I guess, or what your sort of potential is. So yeah, I guess like on your point of doing heaps of throwing, I think I'd probably regret it in 20 years' time if I didn't try and do as much throwing as I possibly could during a training week, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I remember getting some very similar advice. A coach said to me that players pick themselves. I don't know if that was a cop-out because he didn't pick me, but he basically, you know, the idea that you do have some kind of, you know, volition or whatever in terms of what you can control. And I think that's it's a pretty cool lesson to learn nice and early.
Yeah, definitely. And just those little sort of gems of wisdom from your older players, just about how you conduct yourself at training and all that sort of stuff. Slip is obviously a great one. Pretty easy to talk to and just a super experienced campaigner, but also you guys like Will Skelton, and even for me, Richie Arnold was a guy that I sort of go along with, connected with quite well, and he's been sort of jamming it overseas in the top 14 for quite some time.
Did Nick White give you any advice on the mustache game or anything like that? Or
no, not really. I think we did like casually compliment each other on the stash occasionally. We're probably running different styles, but the appreciation was there.
who's got the better one then?
I think probably Whitey.
Whitey has to grow it longer, so it makes him look taller. So I think you're not that short man syndrome as much as he does. So it's all good.
Yeah, I want it on the record that I didn't say that, Whitey.
No, quite.
Hey, Matt, really good to have you on the show tonight, and all the best this weekend. It's going to be a big one, and I know that I wouldn't want to be packing down, not this would ever happen, but Jordan Walesi and Taniela Tupou, a couple of big guys that you're going to be packing down against. So all the best and good luck with the game.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming, Matty.
Well, great to have Matt Fesler on the show. And I'll tell you what, he's doing some great things with the Queensland Reds, and that maul and that scrum work and that line out's really humming with Zane Hilton there running the cutter as the assistant coach. How do you see this game playing out, Matt, between the Rebels and the Reds? It's a really big one, both sides, two wins from three matches, and it almost kind of could set the tone for their respective seasons going forward.
Yeah, well, it's going to be huge. I think the Reds in the last, say, 5-6 years have had the wood over the Rebels. But, you know, the Rebels are well and truly, I dare say they could be favourites in this game. But it'll be interesting to see how the Reds respond after such, two really emotional weeks. I know there's, you know, in general, a lot of if you look at a lot of test matches, you'll often play two games and you have a bye week after that, because that third week is often a week that emotionally is quite hard to stay up. So I think that could be an opportunity for the Rebels. They probably haven't had those emotional highs of extra time and, you know, winning on the bell and all that. So it'll be tough for the Reds to back up, but they've definitely shown they can do it. They have the set piece to do it, and that's important.
Yeah, that's a really good point about that emotional high. We see that in the rugby championship, generally a couple of games, and then it's that bye. The Reds, I think they'll probably still be without Hunter Paisami. I've got a feeling Jordan Bataille might come back. Where, I'm not sure. But the Rebels, Rob Leota left the field pretty early in the opening few minutes against Moana Pacifica. I've been told he's a real chance, and it's just every now and again that he gets a knock to his leg. The match could probably just won by whose set piece functions better. We know that the Rebels have had struggles with their line out, particularly not always hitting the target. If they can get some good ball for their outside backs, particularly Carter Gordon, they've got really big, powerful, dynamic forwards like Taniela Tupou and Leota. It's a really exciting matchup, I think, against these two sides.
It really is. And look, I think the Rebels haven't hit their straps yet, and that's not necessarily a bad thing a couple of weeks into the season. You know, like they definitely have a lot of growth there. They look decent. They picked a little bit of a different team that many might have thought. Kellaway obviously shifted to the wing. So it'll be interesting to see where they go in terms of the makeup of their backline. But I think it's going to be really important, the start. I think if the Rebels shut out the Reds early, I think you might get that like kind of emotional fatigue from the last few weeks. So I think the Rebels need to start early, get some points early, and kind of make it a rough day for the Reds.
Really good point. Switching gears, parking the Reds Rebels for the moment, and the Brumbies and Force played on the weekend. Force and Simon Cron must be just kicking himself and thinking far out. We've let another game slip through our fingers there. That the Force had that. I thought that early on the Brumbies were really flat once again, and it surprised me how slow they were before eventually coming back to win that game by a couple of points.
Yeah, and it was a really high quality game. I think, like it, as you say, I think Simon Cron will be kind of like, it's really easy to look at the wins and losses and say, oh, listen, you know, we've had an awful start, but they've shown some really good things. They just, their ability to manage the game in that second part is really, needs a lot of work. You know, there's a lot of growth there. Yeah, I noticed Nick White stayed on for a lot longer and that helped that. But you just saw once that bench come on, the team just lacked a lot of poise and really struggled to kind of manage the game and kind of get a result, which we know is super important in this competition.
Yeah, it's depth, isn't it? Because it's not necessarily a trust of your bench, and it's a chicken and egg really, because every coach needs wins, but you also need to be able to grow the depth of your squad. And I look at, say, the Force there, Isaac Fiennes-Leluasa must be thinking, oh dear, like... And I'm only getting 10 minutes here. I didn't get compare that to, you know, Teddy Wilson at the Waratahs. Only got a couple of minutes and showed a really, really bright couple of minutes too. Mahi Vaalanu at the Waratahs stayed on for 70 minutes. It's, you know, you've experienced what it's like at times where you stay out there longer because maybe the depth's not there. How do you find that balance, do you think?
I think players, you've got to realise that it's a part of your natural growth or your career. Like if we look at, so we're talking now about Isaac Fiennes kind of only playing the last 10 minutes or so. I remember Nick White, obviously a close friend of mine, his first three test matches, he got picked for the Wallabies. He didn't get on once. So it was a three-match series against Wales. He did not get on once, you know, and it's a part of your growth. It's a part of it, this. And when you get a chance, you've just got to make the most of it. And look, unfortunately, the guys at the moment are not doing enough. And yeah, sure, you can say, oh, they need more time, they need this. Like, this is, you know, it's professional rugby. It's an elite standard. And if you get given 10 minutes, then it's got to be the best 10 minutes that you can play. If you get given 3 minutes, you got to play good in 3 minutes. And, you know, rather than kind of finding excuses, I think we have to realize, like, there's good players. And as I say, it's all a part of your journey. Nick White's done it many a times. I've done it many a times. Other guys have done it many a times. It's a part of it, and you've kind of just got to make do.
What did you think of Matt of Ben Donaldson? I thought he, outside of that 20-minute probably slow start early in the second half when they lost Harry Potter to the Sin Bin, I thought Donaldson, that was one of his strongest Super Rugby matches, ran to the line a fair bit and managed to find some holes too.
Yeah, he did. He did. And look, he's our, as we've said before, he's our incumbent 10 at the moment. So it's nice to see him set up a couple of tries. I think he'll probably look at that game and see that missed kick as probably an opportunity where, you know, we could have exerted some more pressure. But I think all things being equal, he's playing some good game. He looks fit. He looks fit. Of like, if you look at all the tens at the moment, I think he looks the most agile, which is a good thing. But that being said, look, he'll be disappointed. That kick really does change the momentum. And there are a few kicks on the weekend, to be fair, across the competition that were some big ones.
Yeah, you're not wrong. The Brumbies, they managed to eke out that win. That generally is a sign of a reasonable team if they win when they're not playing their best. Mm. And it is only round three, so it's a long, long way to go. They're going to come up against the Highlanders this week who just managed to scrape over the line against the Tars. Where do you see that game being won and lost? And are the Brumbies still a real shot despite the fact they're not at their best?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little bit torn with the Brumbies at the moment in terms of their game. Like, I think round one, so Brumbies traditionally start the year very well. You know, after six rounds, they're usually five wins and we're all raving it, and then they kind of limp into finals. And it's been that way since I was there, to be fair, and a bit same as last year. At the moment, that I think they're struggling for that identity. Typically, you would say they're a structured team whose maul is really good, and you're probably not getting that feeling from them anymore. So I think it'll be interesting to see where they go. They definitely have increased their ambition in terms of playing a lot more around the middle part of the field. So, yeah, I'm not too sure, if I'm being honest. I'm not too sure. I think there's a bit of clunkiness that they've got to figure out. I think the Highlanders are a dangerous team, so Yeah, look, I know they'll want to be going back to kind of the strengths, as we know, you know, the Brumbies traditionally very good at. But I think, you know, in the last couple of games at least, it's been a little bit clunky.
We spoke to Laurie Fisher the other week, and I think you can see almost, there was a really telling comment by Ryan Lonergan at the end. I don't know if you saw him being interviewed, but he was asked by Justin Harrison, I think it was, did Bernie give you much of a spray at halftime, or how's that compared to ones that you've had previously? And he almost chuckled by saying, look, nothing's comparing to what Dan McKellar was offering. And you take away Dan McKellar and the edge that he provided, as well as Laurie Fisher. I just wonder as well, with Steve is pretty quiet, generally speaking, very measured. Rob Sieb, another one who's pretty measured. And then you've got a couple of new coaches there in Ben Mullen and the new forwards coach, John. You'd be able to tell me his last name. So how much is that a telling or a contributing factor in their struggles?
Yeah, I guess a coach whose nickname is Bernie. I don't know if you know the story. The idea is because he doesn't talk very much like Weekend at Bernie's. So I don't think you're going to expect a massive blow up in that sense. But look, Stevens had a lot of experience. He's a very, very good coach. As you're saying, I think the balance of the coaching will be interesting. Ben Mullen, you know, first year probably doing in such a high level job, someone who's got a mountain of knowledge, who expects a lot. You know, these are guys who are kind of early in their career, probably wouldn't overlook it too much. I think they are going to have to find out. It's going to be one of those things of that, where they compare it to past seasons and try to aim for that, or do they try and forge their own, you know, identity in their own path? Yeah. Exactly. You know, and I think it'll be a case of that. And you've got some good men in good positions there who, you know, look, it might not happen straight away, but I think they've got the problem-solving ability to find something that does work.
Yeah, there's more than enough talent there, and good to see Darcy Swain return. Alan Alatoa is still probably a couple of weeks away. When he comes back, he'll provide that edge immediately and so much leadership. Ryan Lonergan, I think, is a very good player. He might not have been at his best on the weekend. The first 20 minutes struggled a little bit too, but he's a guy with leadership. But Alan Alatoa, to me, he's the Wallabies captain, perhaps in waiting. I think it's time for him. Have you got a feeling around the leadership? And like, it's been a big talking point with the Australian Rugby, the Rugby Australia recommendations recently, a lack of leadership across the board. He's someone that I think has got bucket loads of it.
Alan is a huge leader, and I saw it when he was, you know, only a teenager, and he come up, and just something about him, he just kind of has this little bit of aura, and he's in a position of, you know, tight head prop, where he's giving so much physical effort that you kind of want to, you know, as a follower, you want to follow that. And, you know, if you get a 9 or a 10 who's a captain, they're probably a bit more verbal, and that's how you follow. And I think, you know, anytime you can get like a tight head or a back rower as your leader, I think that works the best, because they are guys who are kind of in and around the ruck, they're doing the hard stuff, and they lead by example. And Alan is one of them, and he speaks well, he leads well, and he'll definitely be mentioned in the Wallabies captaincy, that's for sure. And the Brumbies need him out there.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Taz, geez, Darren Coleman, if he had much hair, he's probably lost a little bit on the weekend. But it's such fine margins, isn't it? But they go down last kick of the game. If Tadman slots that, they're dancing. They're two straight against New Zealand opposition, going into a really difficult but big clash against the Blues. What did you like out of the Tars, or what didn't you like?
The fact that they backed up physically. It was interesting to notice, I think around 60, 65 minutes, they had about three or four backs cramping. So there clearly has been some fatigue in the last, you know, couple of weeks, whether it be emotionally and physically. So I think that it's a team that were, you know, they put themselves in there with a chance to win. Obviously, everyone always looks at the last kick. That being said, you know, they did very well in saying that. You know, I think they will look at it as a bit of a missed opportunity. Like the look of Riley, the left winger. I thought he looks solid. You know, often a new winger comes in, they're a little bit hesitant physically, and we saw him put a nice little shot on out there, and it's kind of good to see a guy come up and who's ready to play at this level.
He might have been pushed away for the last Highlanders try, probably going a bit too high, but great response because he's the one who slides through that hole for really lovely. Like they score second phase through Max Jorgensen, but I think it was Fergus Lee Warner who took the first hit up from the line out. It was a nicely constructed play getting to the edge and exposing a bit of a new centres combo with a replacement coming on at outside centre, I think it was. Jorgensen, he just, and I was there at the game, he looks like he was going to break free two or three times, eventually scores the try. What have you liked from Max Jorgensen so far? He's only 19, but he looks like he's got so much poise and time up his sleeve.
Yeah, I think you're right. He's fast, can do all that thing, but all that. But the head on his shoulders, you know, like he does seem calm. He doesn't seem overly flustered, you know. Young players can be vulnerable to some, you know, brain farts or just some, you know, absolute rocks or diamonds. But he doesn't seem like he has that. He seems like quite a balanced rugby player and measured and it's good to see, you know. I think we like seeing that and you can see why he is still being spoken about, but he's spoken about a lot in terms of target for the NRL or whatever, because he clearly has a good head on his shoulders
and he's balanced when he runs. That's something that stands out to me. He's very balanced. And I don't know if there's too many players in Australian rugby at fullback. Andrew Kellaway's one. He's going great guns for the Rebels at the moment. But for a 19-year-old to be putting out the performances from day dot for the Tars, he's got a big priority, almost number one for the Tars.
Yeah, you'd hope so. And he's a guy you can kind of build your backline around. I think he's not someone who's going to be filling in. He's going to be someone who you kind of cement in and then you build that balance around it, because you feel quite secure with a guy like that at the back, which you can, to be fair, you don't really say often about a 19-year-old.
Yeah. So the Blues this weekend, Saturday night, if the Tars slip up, they go 1-4. If they win, they're back on even terms at 2. It's a big game for lots of reasons, including for Darren Coleman and trying to stop the speculation around his future. But the Blues, they slipped up against the Hurricanes, a couple of early injuries themselves. No Zane Sullivan, who's a pretty classy player at the back there for the Blues. But I imagine the game's going to be won in the forward pack with Hoskins Satutu probably come back, Akira Ioane there. And we know that guys like Angus Talva, a former Waratah himself, these sorts of guys, they just make such a presence out there. That's where it'll be won, surely, won't it?
Yeah, and I'd like to see the Tars go back to, you know, what they did so well against Crusaders. And it was direct, it was physical, it was breakdown. And that's, you know, it's very, very easy to kind of see, oh, we've got the Blues, you know, step offload, it's going to be really open and all that. And sure, it might happen in the last 20 minutes where it gets to that game. But for the Waratahs to win, they've got a big, strong pack. You know, they've got guys there who really dig in. And I think for me, if they can get back to that game where they're direct, they're really physical, their attacking clean out is long, it's quick ball, Jake Gordon gets to have a little bit of a dart here and there, that they can be successful. I think, I feel like personally that this Waratahs team has a little bit more to them than say a couple of years ago, and I think it's very easy to get suckered in. You know, we spoke about it a while ago. They've got one of the hardest draws, you know, in the competition. So, you know, hopefully they haven't got too stuck up on results, and then they realise they do have what it takes to kind of to take it to the Blues and definitely get a win.
Before we touch on the Rugby Show recommendations, Fiji Crusaders, mate. If only the draw had been introduced to this competition a few years ago, right? Like before we started exploring Argentina or Japan, they are the best fans going around. I'm envious of Greg Clark calling all the games and seeing that atmosphere every week.
Yeah, I wonder what he does in between games. He must, like, what, Monday to Friday, feed up at the Hilton or doing whatnot.
He's not getting much of a tan, I'll tell you that.
It doesn't look that way, does it? Oh, mate, they're unreal, isn't it? And somehow it kind of, even just watching it from, God, Japan when it's middle of winter, you get that heat, you get that feeling, that sense of atmosphere through the Stan Sport or through the Fox Sports or whatever. And it's great. It's great to see. There's emotion, there's feeling, and it's a tough place to play.
Have you ever played up there for international? Like I can't remember Australia ever going there
No,
certainly not in your time. Was there the Reds played? I think up in Apia. Did you ever play anywhere up there?
No. In all my time, we definitely didn't head to any Pacific Islands. To be fair, I think we played Samoa in Sydney. I think the only times we played Fiji was during the World Cups. We haven't. I'm glad they're exploring it now because it's great for fans, isn't it?
Oh, mate, I just think, and I know that the financial struggles and around bringing broadcast revenue in there, but I just would love to see Fiji get involved in the rugby championship because I just think, Rob Penny was complaining a little bit about the heat and said that a couple of his players were really struggling with the heat exhaustion and in the second half, which I can understand, but you can't tell me that a Fijian side that took the park up in France isn't going to be competitive when you've during a rugby championship. I just think that that would bring so much flavour to the TRC, which has been missing for a long, long time.
Oh, definitely. And I think, the closer we can start getting to adding a Fiji and, even a Japan into our kind of format, obviously geographically it's a little bit difficult with flights and whatnot, but if we can get to that where we get these teams in and we allow a way for other teams to kind of get in there, it would be great because, currently it's a little bit rinse and repeat, isn't it? We've been doing it for so long, and to be fair, it's been like, all right, who's going to win the All Blacks or the Springboks this year? Like, it would be nice to add a little bit more to it. And you know what? And to be fair, even watching Moana and the Rebels on Friday, there would have been a collective amount of, four people in the stands? Like, it was awful. So, and as you say, financially, it's a different discussion. But, it's nice to see the islands responding to a Fiji Drua team and hopefully something with a Moana Pacifica where we can get more games, whether it be in Apia or in Tonga, that would be great.
Yeah, it has to be done for their future going forward. I think there's no point playing them out of Auckland or on the weekend being shifted to Hamilton. It's just not sustainable from both a fan perspective but a commercial perspective too. Last point on that, I think the TRC, there's going to be two Springboks games in Australia this year. Australia's playing two games in Argentina. The format, I don't like it. It doesn't appeal to me. And I think the Six Nations have got it right. Five games over an 8-week period, and you don't play everyone twice. You're playing each other once. I don't understand why you couldn't just do that with the TRC, include Japan or include Fiji, and then play a second game against the All Blacks for the Bledisloe Cup. I think it would just add so much more dimensions and totally the jeopardy between fifth or sixth and first, because no side wants to go to Fiji to take them on in the Saturday afternoon, or even Japan. And I know that the Sunwolves previously drew massive crowds when they were in Super Rugby and they barely won a game. So I just think, please, a bit of innovation and a little bit of courage to try something would be so great from Sansa.
Oh, it would. And look, that, I remember speaking to Michael Hooper about this. The as a player, you'd play two games against the All Blacks, usually in Australia and New Zealand. Then you'd go to South Africa, Argentina, and then back to Australia. And you'd circumnavigate the world in the space of a couple of weeks. And as Hoop said, it takes years off your career. Like, you just, it's not feasible. And I guess, it is nice to see that at least they're kind of keeping, maybe this year it might be two doubleheaders, two games in Australia, and then next year we go over there and play two there. But just, I don't know, rip the Band-Aid off and do something that's a little bit more exciting. Do something that's actually a little bit more innovative, because as we say, it is rinse and repeat. It's nice that the South Africans are coming here for a couple games. That's good. It's an improvement. But I think we need to make it a bit easier to follow. But the hard thing is the geographical difference. Like in Europe, it's easy to have these games. They're all, within 1 or 2 hour time difference. It's a bit different when you're waking up to watch the Wallabies play in Pretoria at 3 a.m. So they're things that we probably can't necessarily control, but I'd like to see them try something different for sure.
Well, Matt, the last point I wanted to bring up, the Rugby Australia recommendations, 23 of them, in fact, a $2.6 million over unapproved budget spend. That was probably the big headline from it. But when we're talking about review and some accountability, what were your first impressions when you saw the recommendations?
Hard to understand, isn't it? Like there's a lot of corporate speak, and I understand a lot of people probably say that. It's very broad in the sense that, like, where do you actually get these measurables from? You know, a lot of things we're using, you know, foster reviews or foster a culture that, you know, encourages X, Y, and Z. And it just seems to me and probably to the everyday fan, like just trash, to be honest with. It just feels a bit, you know, like, what does that mean? And look, I think as a whole, seeing a $2.6 million deficit or overspend, sorry, on a program, you can see why clubs don't want to sign up to this kind of alignment. And, you know, I'm someone who 100% believes in the centralization. We have to kind of pool our resources and pull our facilities and whatnot, but in order to do that, you've got to trust the governing body. And when they're overspending by $2.5 million, it's hard. That doesn't bring much confidence.
No, you're exactly. And it kind of read to me like, how's a national high performance team, a side that's won two World Cups, how are they putting out this sort of stuff? Because it looks like they're the sorts of things and principles that you'd hope a under-16s team might have. That's a representative side in any sport. It just read like, what's rugby in Australia doing at the moment when you've got to put out that stuff? And I imagine that a lot of it's been watered down. We're not really seeing what are a lot of the specific details. And I can understand you're not necessarily going to release everything, but it put me to sleep, and I imagine it will put most people to sleep. I think the big thing is a couple of decisive decisions have already been made. Peter Horn's come in as director of high performance. Joe Schmidt's obviously on board as head coach. Looks like Laurie Fisher's going to be his assistant in the defensive role. So already we can be probably pretty encouraged by some of the appointments that are being made now in the post-Eddie Jones era. But I don't think Phil Waugh can completely distance himself, and Dan Herbert for that matter as well, and wipe their hands clean from the fact that, you know, it happened under their watch. Why wasn't systems put in place? Like credit cards, they don't just get thrown around willy-nilly at Rugby Australia. They would come up pretty quickly when someone spends $100,000 on whatever it might be, but there was hotel changes. There was a chartered aeroplane that they had to get from Arnhem Land after forgetting various items. It's kind of looked like amateur hour at the end of it, I think.
It's embarrassing, Christy. Like, my wife gets an alert every time I buy a new golf club. You know, like, we have systems in place that kind of alert us when there's an overspend or whatnot. And to hear $2.5 million, and sure, you know, if all things being equal, let's be fair, what was our budget? Was the budget too low? You know, how does it compare to other national teams? But
it's a good question.
Yeah, like I'd like to see that. But the review, I think it was almost meant to bore us. You know, I'm reading it right at the moment. You know, create an environment that is built on trust with an emphasis on player and staff welfare. Like, what does that mean? And surely that's a given. Like, surely, you know, trust and, you know, welfare, that's kind of a given. I think it's, yeah, I don't know. I like many, I think I brushed over it. I think one thing I would be keen to see going forward is we've obviously put Peter Horn in place. I'd like to see us actually question him about eligibility. So players playing overseas, you know, we spoke last week about the foreign eligibility, the ghetto law and whatnot. I think Peter Horn should be the guy who we talk to about this, not Joe Schmidt. Joe Schmidt's the coach. Let's start separating those roles, and let's start, you know, talking to Joe about why did we play this way, you know, who are you going to pick, selection, whatnot. And then let's move to, you know, Peter Horn, and we go, okay, where does eligibility fit? where does high performance fit? You know, where do these kind of things? Because in the past, we've only ever seen the head coach as kind of the figurehead and the one who kind of just copped all of it. And I think it's too much. I think we need to split those roles and make them clearly defined.
Really good point. I hope that Peter Horn, like, he's only come into the role in the last couple of weeks, as has Joe Schmidt. They've got a lot of catching up to do. They're about to appoint a new Wallabies manager. So the clock is ticking. It's only less than 4 months before Australia take on Wales. So every second counts at this point in time. They need to make sure that they quickly get on top of their player retention policy at the moment, what they're going to do with national top-ups. Is the salary cap going to increase going forward, or is in fact going to go back? All big questions, because there's players that are thinking, what's happening next with my career? Am I going to get a top-up? We know that Jordan Bataille has been linked to the rugby league. I think there's NFL as an option if he wants to make a pretty big switch, like Lewis Rees-Zammit. Japan would be an option, I imagine. I think he'd be really destructive up there too. But Pataya's one, there's so many others. And with the Melbourne Rebels and their predicament about what their future might hold, there could be an explosion of players suddenly on the market, and you need to be in the best possible position to make decisions quickly. So I don't know what you think about Jordan and the reports recently about him potentially to the Dragons. I think he's just going to be catching up with them and having a discussion. I don't think he's set out his plans or necessarily knows himself.
Yeah, I don't think we can take it for granted that, you know, we've got a Lions series coming up in 2 years and a World Cup a couple of years after that. Therefore, players are all going to want to stay, because ultimately players don't want to stay to, you know, at worst case, lose a Lions tour and get embarrassed at a home World Cup. So we can't take that for granted that guys are going to stay here. We have to build an environment that people want to play for this, you know, want to play, want to win against the Lions, want to have a successful campaign. And so I think personally, looking at Super Rugby, you've seen a lot of the New Zealand teams probably have a little bit more transition because, you know, they don't have a Lions series coming up. They don't have a home world coming up. So you've got your Artie Salvez, your Richie Moongas going overseas. And we've probably been cushioned against that because we do have, you know, the lure to play in that Lions series. However, we've seen with Mark Nawonga Niitawase, who's left, like, it isn't as big carrot as we may have thought, you know, and having that World Cup experience that they've all just had, you know, that plays on people's mind, and it's not necessarily, you know, a home run that maybe in the past we might have thought. So, yeah, I think we need to be really clear with the people who we want to retain and the people we need to keep, and we need to go after them hard.
Yeah, that's why Joe Schmidt's got a really big job ensuring that he gets his coaching team in order really quickly, because they need to really prioritise who are the 23, the 35 players that they're strongly considering about from a Wallabies perspective, because you don't win a World Cup or a Lions series just with a starting 15. Matt, awesome to have you as always. Matt Fesler, good to talk to him. He's an impressive human being. And last shout out, Super W starts this weekend. Do check it out. The Queensland Reds, I think they're hosting the Fijiana Drua and a grand final rematch. So that'll be a game to look out for. Circle that, put it in your calendars. Good to have you chat, though.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me. And, yeah, it was great having Matty Fassler on. I thought, yeah, very well spoken for a young fella with an awful mustache.
All right. Cheers.